it can be worthwhile to any business if it's done well. It is the best way to create engagement, to grow trust, to really grow a fan base around your business, because even small numbers of podcast listeners have a huge effect. It's been shown around the stats that a podcast listener is worth more than a blog reader. You know, it's just in terms of conversion numbers. You know, if you have 100 podcast listeners, you'll get a significant number of them take action on something you ask them to do. So like 20 out of 100 might actually do something that you ask them to do, whether it's just click a link or join your email list or buy a product.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi innovators, it's great to be back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Colin Gray, the founder of thepodcasthost.com, host of the PodCraft podcast, and a speaker and educator. Now, I've been a listener to PodCraft for a couple of years now and have learned a lot from them, a lot that we're using on the InnovaBuzz podcast, so I was really pleased to welcome Colin to our podcast today. We had a lot of fun discussing the benefits of podcasting and using podcasting as both a marketing tool and for education and training, and as one of the three pillars of your content marketing. We talked about the learning structure to keep people engaged and have them take action from what they've learned, and we talked about finding your unique combination of skills. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Colin Gray.
Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Dundee in Scotland in the UK, Colin Gray, the founder of thepodcasthost.com, host of the podcast, the PodCraft podcast. That's a bit of a tongue twister, a speaker and an educator. So welcome to the podcast, Colin. It's a privilege to have you as a guest.
No, it's a privilege to be here, Jürgen. Thanks for having me.
I've been a listener to PodCraft for a couple of years now, and I've learned a lot from there, a lot of things that we're using on our podcast, in the InnovaBiz podcast. So I'm really looking forward to exploring the topic of podcasting and using podcasting for marketing and for education and for other things with you.
Excellent. No, happy to chat it all through. It's it'd be good to talk podcasting. Always happy to talk podcasting with anyone.
Now, before we talk about all things podcasting, let's find out a little bit more about you as a person. Now, as a young child, what did you want to do when you grew up?
I was I had a two-tier system for what I wanted to be. I had the kind of standard. I wanted to be an astronaut. I was a really geeky kid. I loved space, and I had my set of binoculars. I spent a lot of time looking at the moon and the stars and lots of astronomy books and stuff like that. So I always thought it'd be cool to be an astronaut. But the other part of my geeky side was very much into computer games. I spent hours of my youth playing things like Red Alert and Civilization and Dune 2 and stuff like that. So the other thing I wanted to do was either be a games creator or a games tester. Obviously, I discovered later in life that being a games tester is actually one of the most dull things you can do in the history of the world, but it would be a cool idea at the time to just get to play games all day.
Yeah. Now you actually studied some astrophysics, I think, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
So
you did kind of head towards being an astronaut?
Yeah, that was the idea. I wasn't sure whether I'd ever get to be an astronaut itself, but I thought I was still interested in space, certainly, when I finished school. So yeah, that was, and I was good at physics, enjoyed physics. So I thought it was a good first choice, at least, to have a look at. But turns out as well, similar to the games testing idea, as soon as you get deep into astrophysics, it turns from exciting cool stuff about planets flying through space and exploding suns, it turns from those exciting things into just pure maths, and it just becomes really, really boring. So yeah, if you want to spend all day, every day doing the most ridiculously complex formula and maths as you can, then do astrophysics. But if you don't, then no, don't do that.
Yeah. I remember astronomy was one of the things that really fascinated me as a child, and I wanted to be an astronomer until I discovered that it was pretty well all maths.
Yeah. No, avoid that like the plague. I didn't even dislike maths, actually. Like, I was pretty decent at maths. I still kind of, it's one of my favorite subjects, but there was just so much in there and it was so deep and so complex. It just wasn't worth it.
That's right. Yeah. No, it's unlike looking at planets and nebulae and so on in deep space. It was just doing lots of calculations on paper.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right. Well, how did the journey to podcasting come about then from astrophysics?
Yeah, there was a kind of a long and winding road through my 20s, I suppose. After I discovered I wasn't really into astrophysics or even physics at large, I ended up spending a few years just sort of working in bars and just doing a few random jobs. And one of the things I did at the time was web development. So I went back and did my master's in web design and interactive systems. And that was good fun. It taught me a little fair bit about kind of animation and playing around Flash and stuff like that. So I was playing around in creating websites for people and getting paid for a few as well. So I had not exactly a successful freelance career, but I did it for a little while. But after a wee while, I ended up taking a job as a tutor at a local college, actually, because I'd done a bit of the web development work. I managed to get in as a tutor assistant at a college. And that got me into teaching, really. And I discovered at that point that actually I enjoyed teaching the concepts of web design and the skills of web design just about as much as I did enjoy doing it. And that kind of that just took me down the education path, really. I got into being a lecturer. Beyond that, I was a learning technologist for a while, which basically just means teaching lecturers how to use technology to teach students. So I ended up being a lecturer at a university in Edinburgh around learning technology. And one of the fancy, fashionable technologies at the time, back in 2006, 2007, was podcasting. So I actually learned my first podcasting skills with the purpose of teaching lecturers how to use it to teach students. So it was kind of a roundabout way of getting into it. But I ended up teaching a course on podcasting at a university. Back in 2007, and I taught that for 2 or 3 years. And really, what I do now, it just stemmed from the fact that during that time, I started writing a blog just because I got excited about it. I just kind of fell in love with the medium. I loved the combination of the geekiness, like the shiny things, like being able to play around with mixers and mics and figuring out like audio processing and making stuff sound good. And I love the combination of that with the speaking skills, the presentation, the getting their voice out there, you know, like being able to, being able to speak to people in a really informal, easy way without much pressure. You don't have to stand in front of folk or even look into a camera. You're just there in a room speaking into a mic, just being normal, natural. And I loved that combination of the tech and the presentation skills. And actually what made me fall in love with it, started the website, thepodcasthost.com back then, just as a wee hobby on the side. And I was just lucky enough, really, that as I was teaching at the university, that blog started to gain a bit of traction. Podcasting started to gain a bit of traction. So traffic went up and that blog started to earn an income for me through affiliate, through sponsorship, that type of stuff, which grew well enough through to 2014-15, whereby I had enough to quit my teaching job and just jump into that full time. And that's really what got me to where I am today.
That's a fascinating story, and it kind of highlights one of the benefits, I think, of podcasting, which we'll come to in a moment, but that's, you know, there is an opportunity to use it to actually make an income directly through things like affiliate or teaching. But, you know, there's so much more in it. I'm fascinated because, and you know, this surprises me in one way, but it doesn't in another, but I guess podcasting kind of took off in the very early 2000s in a big way, and then it had a bit of a hiatus, and it's really only just starting to come good, perhaps in the last 5 years again.
Yeah, I mean, you can trace the, sort of the origins back to, like you say, the early 2000s, I think 2003, 2004 or so. And it started growing. It was really a very geeky, techie thing back then. It was actually really hard to listen to, like to subscribe to them, and there wasn't much software around. And I think, I mean, there's been so many calls for, you know, the resurgence of podcasting, the tipping point of podcasting, all these kind of things. And really just, it's been one of these mediums that's just slowly and steadily plodded on and grown and grown. Every year there's been a bit of growth, but nothing like groundbreaking. And you're right, it was when a lot of people talk about the Serial effect. It was when Serial really broke through, and that was the first big mainstream podcast, the first one that went above like 100. Well, I don't know if exactly the first one that went above 100 million, but certainly it was the most prolific podcast in a short space of time. Hit 100 million downloads and got into the real news, not just, you know, the techie or the podcasting news. And really, there's been a few changes since then, even like the fact that Apple put the podcast app in by default into iOS, and just a few. There's been a bunch of more easy ways to listen to podcasts, from smart speakers to Android apps, that have just really helped us accelerate. And yeah, you're right. Over the last couple of years, the acceleration's been better. You know, more people getting into it more fastly. It's not even a word. Yeah. More quickly. So yeah, it's doing well, but you're right, it's never quite hit that, you know, like complete acceleration. But I mean, I almost feel that's a good thing, because it means we're keeping up with it. It means that the industry's growing. It's not like, it's not overgrowing itself. It's just, we're getting in listeners, we're doing well. And more people are listening to podcasts every week.
Yeah, well, there's certainly lots of podcasts out there. If you go into any of the apps and do a search, you sort of get overwhelmed. So to look at something that you might be interested in takes a little bit of searching. In terms of somebody thinking about getting into podcasting, I mean, can you give us a very brief snapshot of what you see as the benefits of having a podcast for your business?
Yeah, I mean, the way I always think about it is kind of it's a three-tier engagement system, which involves all the different types of content. It involves blogging. You've got blogging, video, and podcasting. That's the kind of the triumvirate of content, really, isn't it? Blogging is really the kind of the wide part of the net. You know, you're casting your net out there, trying to grow yourself an audience. The podcast, the blog is really the wide reach, isn't it? Like, everyone reads by text. Everyone, you know, searches by text. Voice search is becoming a bit more common these days. Video search does well, but still, text search is the king, really. That's where most people get it. And it's also one of the most easy ways to consume as well. You know, you can consume text anywhere. You can open up an article on your phone. You can skim through it. You can jump back and forth. It's the most flexible way to take content in, the quickest way to take content in. Because if you come to video and audio, you know, it's kind of, you're controlled in how you can consume it. You know, if it's a 3-minute video, it's quite hard to skip through a video and find the right bit. Whereas with text, you can skim through it. So you've got that blog, that text, which is the first level. People find you easy, they read you easy, they consume you easy. But the engagement at that point is consequentially not as high. You know, it's quite hard to actually move people's emotions in text. You have to be a really good writer to make people cry by writing. Yeah. People really like you by writing at them. So that's really the kind of the downside of the text medium. People find you really well, they consume you really prolifically, but they don't get to know you very well. And that's where media comes in. So that's where the video and the podcasting comes in. So with video and podcasting, video and audio, people get to know you. You know, you put your personality out there, you're speaking, they can see you, they can get your tone of voice, your inflection, just sort of your enthusiasm and your passion comes through in those mediums. The differentiation there, though, is that with video, the attention is very limited. You know, you always hear these stats that people only ever watch the first 3 minutes of a YouTube video. It's a struggle to get somebody to watch more than a few minutes of any YouTube video. And in a lot of ways, that's true. You know, the attention is pretty divided on YouTube. You've got all these other videos down the side, or you've got your computer open with browsers all open. There's just too much going on there, too many ways to escape. So while you can engage people in video is great for impact. It's great for short and sharp stuff. It's great for how-tos. It's not so great for really growing that engagement, because the attention's so split. But it's a good way to get people into knowing you a little bit better. And from there, once they know you a wee bit, then they can commit to listening to a podcast. Because a podcast, the advantage of podcasting is really the attention. So you get the engagement, people can grow to know you, they grow to like you, they grow to love you through podcasting, because they not only hear the real you, but they're listening to you for half an hour, 2 hours at a time. You know, you get so much attention with podcasting. It's because of the context of listening. You know, people listen in the car, you're driving for 2 hours, there's nothing else you can do. So you're listening to this audio, you're listening for a long time. And it's that combination of attention for me. It's that combination of attention, you know, 2 hours at a time, combined with engagement, you know, combined with your personality, the transparency, the honesty that comes across through the audio medium. That's what's the real power of podcasting. It grows huge fans. It grows huge fans of your brand, of you. It grows huge trust. People grow to know you, to trust you. And therefore, when you've got that trust, you know, when you've got that group of fans, those are the people that can really, they'll buy your products, they'll help you promote your products to others, they'll be real advocates of the work you do. So that's how it sits for me. It's that three-way tier. You know, you start with the text, you move them up to video, and then podcasting is really that, it's that final, you know, that final push to really turn people into fans of your work so that they'll buy what you do and really help you promote it to others.
Mm. Yeah, I love that explanation. I think it comes back to something that I think is quite fundamental in online business today that people seem to forget about it. It's quite fundamental in any business, but they seem to forget about it in the online space, and that's bringing it back to relationships. So until you build a relationship with somebody and until you establish that level of trust, it's unlikely that they're going to do business with you unless it's just a small spend and commodity spend. So yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. So
I think that audio is just so good at building those relationships. It's even better than video for me, because not only because of that attention, but because of the intimacy. There's something really intimate about, you know, hearing somebody's voice directly through your earbuds into your ears, like somebody speaking inside your brain. It's like a voice in your head, basically. You know, you're watching on the screen, and there's often, it feels a bit separate, you feel a bit apart because you're watching through the screen. There's kind of, often with video it's quite polished, not always, you get quite kind of unpolished video, but often people feel more pressure to polish a video. You know, they've got a good background, good lighting, they've done their hair, good clothes, all that kind of stuff. Whereas with a microphone, people tend to be a lot less formal. You just grab the mic and you start talking. And there's downsides to that, in that some people just put out slightly, you know, there can be far not polished enough content, but the kind of the honesty, the transparency that comes through, the intimacy that comes through by audio, I just think is really powerful. It just builds those relationships. So people feel that they know you as a friend, as opposed to a personality on the screen.
Yeah, I certainly have that experience from people that talk to me about listening to the podcast. And, you know, for me, it's a great privilege that people spend an hour or so to listen to an episode simply because they, well, hopefully they get a lot out of it. But a lot of it comes back to that particular relationship, because there's lots of podcasts that they could be listening to.
Yes. and it's amazing. Such a long form medium that if somebody gives you an hour of their time, like that's powerful. That's somebody that's bound to be a fan of your work and will help you along the way, whether it's monetarily or otherwise.
Yeah, that's right. And I, for me personally, running a podcast, it's a huge privilege to talk to guests all around the world. I mean, that's something that, you know, I was reflecting on it with my wife earlier, because we've got about three lined up over the next few hours and they're from all corners of the world. And I said, it's amazing. You can just jump on the internet, put a microphone in front of you and talk to people from all around the world that have got expertise in given areas and share that with, well, first of all, I learn a lot out of it and then share it with my audience.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's the kind of the unadvertised massive benefit of podcasting, isn't it? Twofold as well. It helps you learn. So you get this time to speak to people that you might not otherwise get the chance to speak to. It's like you can get an hour long consultation session with somebody that maybe charges £500 an hour otherwise.
That's right. Yeah.
Brain and learn. Also just the fact that you're growing your network that way as well. And there's so much value in having relationships with the peers, you know, your peers in the industry, or even people who are a wee bit ahead of you, having relationships with those folk and getting to know them well through a podcast is really powerful. And we've got tons, like I've got tons through my business, through the people that I've met through just interviewing them on podcasts and grown friends there, like real friends that I now meet at events and meet up with. And it's a really powerful thing that you get from it.
Mm. Now you've got a few other podcasts too, as well as the PodCraft podcast, right?
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah, we run so live right now. We've had many over the years. Right now we're still active shows. We've got Hostile Worlds, which is probably the most the one I'm most proud of, because it's going back to the space exploration thing. Technically I am an astronaut, but in the fictional world now. In Hostile Worlds, basically the principle is that we've got it's an audio drama, which is that it's a fiction. So we act out being on a spaceship, but the idea is it's education as well. So we visit far off places. So we visit hostile worlds around our universe. So we've been to Titan, for example. We spent 3 episodes on Titan, just exploring Titan and the cryovolcanoes and the electric snow and all that kind of stuff. Recently, 2 of our characters visited the sun and almost plummeted into the fiery depths of the sun. And that was all acted out, but like using real science. So the idea is that we can teach people real science about the universe, but it's all done in a storytelling format. So really proud of that show, actually. And it
sounds fascinating. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. Yeah, go for it. It's good fun to put together, but it takes a long time.
So with PodCraft, I think you're in series 10 now.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, we just finished off series 10. Well, actually, we just finished recording series 10. I think the last episode of the series comes out next week.
Mm-hmm. So what are the benefits that you see in running a business podcast like that in series?
I think the seasons based format is just so powerful for a bunch of reasons. There's the simple teaching fact that, you know, people learn best when you give them a little bit of at a time. You give them something to do and then you build on what you did last time around. So many podcasts are based on a totally unorganized, you know, just pick up whatever the topic is that whatever you decide to talk about that week type format. So this week I'm going to do something, you know, let's take PodCraft, for example. One week I might talk about the best dynamic microphone for you. It's a really advanced one, looking into the real advanced tips on that. And then next week I might go, oh, real basics, beginner session on how to set up a good recording environment. And then next week it might be presentation skills, and it's like vocal warm-ups, and you're just jumping all over the place. Like you're just changing topics every single week, and it's just all over the place. It's really hard for the listener to kind of gain some real forward progress. It doesn't give them incentive to listen every single week, because they might be a bit less interested in this week, or they might be quite busy. They're interested, but they're busy and they're like, well, I'll miss it this week. I'll catch up again next week. Whereas if you go with a seasons-based format, you're creating a season. So season 10 for us was how to put out your first episode. The minimum required to put out a great first episode, and we broke that down into 12 sessions. So 12 just 15-minute episodes. They're all linked together. Every single episode builds on the last. So it gives the listener really good forward progress. You know, they listen to the first, they do a little bit, they learn a bit, they do a task, then they listen to the next, they build on that. They're learning every single time. And they build real momentum and they build real success. And I mean, that's how to build fans, isn't it? It's to help them succeed. It's to show that you can help people do better in whatever it is that you're teaching. And a seasons-based format just really enables that so well, I think. And it's even just that compulsion thing. You know, people will listen every single episode because they're all linked. You know, there's a real reason to listen to the next episode as opposed to just skipping it because you're busy. So for me, that's the first part of it. It really helps your listeners to succeed. It really creates really well-structured material. And it creates these big resources as well. So we can link people towards, like if somebody says, how do I start podcasting? I can say to somebody, well, go and listen to season 10 of PodCraft. It's about how to start a podcast. It's this really big, solid, chunky piece of material. It's not just go and listen to episode 102 and then episode 98 and then episode 22, because they'll give you bits and pieces. It's no, go and listen to this whole season, start to finish. It'll take you through it. Really chunky bit of material. It just makes you look good. It gives you good authority in the space, I think. So on the listener side of things, that's the benefits. And I think there's a bunch of benefits on the host side as well. Is it worth going into that, do you think?
Yeah, I'm interested.
I think from a host side of things, there's a lot of people drop out of podcasting because for a few reasons. First of which is you get quite jaded and you feel like you're on this treadmill of podcasting. You know, you start a podcast and you say, right, I'm starting a podcast. It's going to be weekly. I'm going to talk for 20 minutes every single week and I'm going to just, you know, do it forever. There's no end point. There's no break. There's none of this. It's just like forever. You've got to keep churning out this podcast. It just feels relentless. It just feels like you're on this treadmill trying to keep up. Whereas with the seasons-based approach, what you do is you plan out your season. You start the season. So with that 12-episode season we just did, me and Matthew sat down for a couple of hours at the start of the season and said, right, what are we going to talk about? We planned out those 12 episodes. We planned out a lot of the content of those 12 episodes as well. So we actually spent 2 hours basically planning out 3 months worth of content, sorry. And that planning session was then done and we had 3 months worth of content, just a full plan for that whole thing. And that made our lives easier for those 3 months. Even better, what we did was we recorded 4 episodes at a time. Mm. So we recorded the first month's episodes all at once, used those plans. And that was really quite quick, quite efficient. Edited them all at once as well. Again, quite quick, quite efficient. Planning ahead really helps you do that batch processing, which makes things much more easy, much more sustainable. So that's the first thing. It makes the actual creation and the planning much easier. You're not waking up on a Monday morning and going, right, I've got to do a podcast this week. What am I going to do it about? I don't know what topic to talk about. You wake up instead and you go, right, I'm doing a podcast episode. What did I plan out to do this week? And you go, oh, right, next episode of the season is this. And I talk about it and it's much easier. The other benefit, of course, is that you've got an end point to look forward to. You've got the end of the season coming up. So through those 3 months, we were like, right, we're creating something. We're building something with a real end point, something substantial, something whole that we can see the end of. And there's something really powerful in that, you know, in your motivation, seeing that you're creating something substantial and finite. You know, we're creating this 12-episode series. It's going to be really valuable to people. And importantly, at the end of that, we get a break. So we take a month off. And when you're doing seasons-based podcasting, it's expected that you can take a break. You know, your listeners get used to that approach. They expect, even, you know, if you're away for 3 months or something, it doesn't lose you listeners because people just keep subscribed in there. As long as you're clear, you say, that's the end of the season. We'll be back in 2 months. We'll be back in 3 months. We'll be back in 6 months. You know, a lot of the new fiction podcasts that are doing really, really well, they're not losing listeners between seasons because listeners know that that's the way things work. It's more the television model, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The entertainment model, I was just thinking. Absolutely.
Yeah, you get a season every year and you expect to wait like 6 to 9 months between each season. So it's not unusual, but it makes your life much easier because you're not on this treadmill. You can do your season, take a break, do some other things, refresh yourself and come back to the next season, you know, enthusiastic, motivated, planned out and really do it well.
Yeah, well, it strikes me that the podcast, and I know it's like this based on what I've listened, that it's very much built around kind of training program structure. And so the seasons does make a lot of sense because you've got the themed. And certainly, I mean, I know from my own experience that batching the podcasts makes things a lot easier because particularly, I mean, in my case, I do a lot of interviews, so it's a little tricky to batch the podcasts because you've got to get interview guests at times that suit them and suit me. But once you get to the editing point, then batching just makes things so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, I would say it is possible. I know it is harder work with an interview show because you've got to coordinate two schedules, two calendars. But I know a fair few people who do, like they set out a day or 2 days and set out a bunch of slots in their calendar and this is going to be my 2 interview days. And it is possible. Perhaps not, like if somebody's starting up a new podcast, you have to be a bit more flexible. You've got a bit less pull. But once you're a bit more established and you can offer, you know, a fair few listeners to get exposure for the interviewees, they can be more willing to work around your schedule too. So it's definitely possible. But yeah, as you say, a bit more tricky.
All right. Now, The other thing that I've noticed, some people are starting to do podcasts through live streaming in Facebook or YouTube or perhaps Twitter now. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on doing that for podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely all for repurposing. So anytime that you can do something that you can use elsewhere as well, so you get more value out of the time you put into something, that's all good. I mean, it's just smart, that. Where I think it falls down is when you try and repurpose something but don't really leverage the power of each of those mediums. So where I think the live shows fall down in terms of repurposing to podcasting is often when you do a Facebook Live, you'll spend the first 2, 3, even 5 minutes basically just, you know, getting to know the people that are there. You say, oh, hi, John, welcome into the room. Oh, yeah, where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a good bit of conversation. And that's what makes live sessions popular, because people come into the live session to interact with the host. And that doesn't make for a good podcast. Because if you're not in the live session, that's pretty rubbish. It's just not interesting. It's not relevant to you. So I think that stuff, that stuff lets down a show and makes it not so repurposable or not so valuable. And especially if you start doing that in the content as well. So if you're recording, say, 15, 20 minutes worth of content and you keep stopping because people say, oh, hi, how you doing? I'm from here. And you go, oh, yes, well done. Yeah, great. And you keep stopping the content to have conversations. That just makes it really kind of waffly and not very good. So I think that you have to be just really careful how you do it. What I do think works, though, is if you can do a live session, and I've done this a few times as well, if you can do a live session whereby you allocate maybe 30, 45 minutes to the live session, you get on Zoom, say, or whatever you're doing it, and you kick off and you say, right, I'm recording my podcast at 2 p.m. If you want to come along to the live session, come along at 1:45. That's when we're actually going to start the live session. We'll do a bit of a chat around it initially. You know, we'll spend 10 minutes, 15 minutes welcoming people, talking to people, even inputting into the show. You know, say my topic is going to be the best microphones for podcasting. Come in 15 minutes early and we'll do some questions like, what mics do you use? We'll do a little survey. We'll poll people. What questions do you have around this? And you can sort of, you can get that feedback and input that into the main show. And then at 2 o'clock, you go, right, okay, folks, I'm going to get into the podcast now. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to spend 10, 15 minutes recording the show. You're all most welcome to stick around and watch the live recording. I'd love you to stick around, in fact, because at the end of this live session, I'm going to run a wee Q&A. And we'll do 10 minutes whereby you can ask any questions you have about the live recording. During the recording, though, I'm not going to be interacting. I'm not going to be responding to chats. I'm just going to fire through the content, and then we'll have the interaction at the end. Is that okay? Right, great. Jump into the show. Hey, and welcome to, you know, and then actually do the recording. And then, like I said, at the end of the recording, you can go in and do the Q&A stuff. And what I would do then is actually that's created a great live session because you've interacted with people. Then you've actually created content that they can listen to, they can follow along with. And actually their feedback has feeded into that content. Like you might have answered a few of their questions in the show itself. It might have even created a better podcast show because you've actually taken real listeners' feedback, real listeners' questions built into the show based on what people just asked you. And then you've got the Q&A at the end. So what you can do is you can actually just cut out that content section and just post that content section on its own as the podcast. Or you could even include that Q&A. Like you could put that Q&A at the end into the podcast too, because you've got the really solid, valuable bit of content at the start, and then you've got some listener Q&A at the end, which is useful, valuable, as long as it's relevant to the topic. So I think live does do well, but I think you have to do it carefully. And that is a method. It's certainly not the only method, but that is a method I've seen work quite well in the past.
Yeah, that's a really good structure. I really like that. I've been on lives as well where people spend the first 5 or 10 minutes and even in the Facebook Live or the live stream environment, it's annoying because they're saying, is it working? Am I live yet? And then they say, hello, Fred, and hello, Sarah. How are you? And all this sort of business. And you're standing there or sitting there thinking, yeah, get on with the topic. when are we going to talk about the topic?
Yeah, exactly. But so, I do think done well, I think live can contribute to making a better show if you do it right, especially if it gets that listener feedback and stuff.
So I think your advice is probably relevant for anybody doing live streaming, regardless of whether they turn it into a podcast or not.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you do need to give that really solid chunk of valuable information with probably less interruptions than the average person does.
Yeah. Now, I know, you know, you mentioned earlier that you started off this podcasting journey by working in higher education and helping educators use podcasting to enhance their teaching. I'm curious, because it sounds like you do quite a bit of this, but I'm curious as to how you structure episodes in a way that you actually get a good educational experience for your listeners, and then take that structure and build your courses, which, you know, you have a lot of online courses, which I'm sure you have a really good learning structure based on your background.
Yeah. I think it's something I feel we've got an advantage in, and I've done a lot of study around that. But I don't think it's anything that complicated, to be honest. I think that, but a lot of people don't do it, which is okay. Yeah. So let's start. So there's a really good structure you can follow. First of all, there's two things that really affect how grown-ups learn. It applies to kids too, actually, but particularly for grown-ups. Like if you're an adult, you're busy. There's two things that can help an adult learn most effectively. The first of which is that they have to know why they're learning. So you need to give them signposting, you need to give them purpose. So it needs to be really clear right at the start. You need to say, right, here's where we're going, here's what you're going to learn, and here's why it's valuable for you to learn this. So a really solid introduction is really important. You need to tell people really clearly. It sounds obvious, like you might feel like you're saying total common sense stuff, but people need to know this. Like people will switch off if they don't know why they're listening to what they're listening to. So give them purpose, give them direction, tell them what's coming and why it's useful to them. The next thing is, and this is really important for adults, is that people learn most effectively if it has an effect in their real life. So you have to know your audience quite well for this. So for us, for example, with podcasting, in just about every single episode of Podcraft, we'll have a task that actually makes a real effect in their real life. So we know that our audience is really keen to start a podcast, to run a good podcast, to grow a podcast, to monetize a podcast. So every single episode, we'll have a task in there that actually helps them take one tiny little step forward in one of those aims. So if it's to launch a show, at the end of the, say, the hosting one, I'll give them a little two-minute, like, here's your next steps. Here's what you're going to do. And give them really solid steps. Like, you're going to go and sign up for either, say, Buzzsprout or Blueberry. Sign up for Blueberry if you're in this situation. Sign up for Buzzsprout if you're in this situation. That is your next step. Go and do it now. And everything you've said up to that point, the rest of the podcast, the purpose of every single word and the rest of that podcast has to be to get them towards being able to achieve that task and nothing else. So if you say anything on the rest of that podcast that doesn't take them towards that aim, then it's waffle, then it's extraneous information that you should cut out. So keep it to the point, keep it all focused towards that particular task. So if all you want them to do is sign up for Buzzsprout or Blueberry podcast hosting, because that's the next step, every single bit of that podcast has to be focused on helping them achieve that aim. Does that make sense? Because so many podcasts don't really do that. So many teachers don't do that. They don't focus on that one aim. And again, like I said, adults, they hate waffle. They hate misdirection. They hate thinking they're getting one thing and get something else, or they hate thinking they're going to get one thing and being sidelined off to something different on the way to it. So you need to keep real focus. So that's what it is. It's intro, tell them what they're going to get, then give them the theory. That theory has to be totally focused on the task you're going to give them at the end of the show. In between the theory and the task, there's something you can do which is really useful, which is a case study. So show how you've done it in real life. Like give them a 2 or 3 minute case study of, so actually this is what we chose and this is how we went about it and these are the benefits that we got. Or tell a story about somebody else that's done it. and you can show how they've done it. So that kind of puts the theory into practice. The first bit is the theory, you know, this is how it works, this is what you're going to do, but then you can do a story that kind of puts it into context. Here's how somebody's actually done it. And then that can lead into the task. Yeah. So that's a three or a four part structure that I think works really well. It's intro, theory, task, or intro, theory, case study, task. But you need to have all of those points. You need to have all of those bits in there. And to me, that's what makes for a good learning experience.
Hmm. Yeah, I like the outline. I mean, as you point out, it's sort of common sense, but common sense isn't that common, as I've observed a few times when people have kind of tried to devalue their expertise a little bit on the interviews in the podcast, and they say, oh, it's common sense to do it that way. And I say, yeah, but it's not. Common sense is not that common. So I like the idea of bringing in a case study or you know how somebody else has done it, because I think the idea of modeling of somebody that's successfully carried out the task is a really powerful learning model, particularly for, well, again, like you say, for children as well.
It's kind of for the achievability of it as well, like showing that somebody has done it. This is somebody that has done it in real life, so it's achievable for anyone. It makes it much more accessible, I think.
All right, well, this is fascinating. I could go on for ages talking about podcasting and various things. Just to follow up on what we were talking about earlier around the benefits, what would you say to people that are sort of thinking about starting a podcast but perhaps procrastinating about it because either they're stuck into this, oh, it's not quite ready, or it's not good enough yet, or perhaps, I don't know.
I think, the first thing is, I think it can be worthwhile to any business if it's done well. It is the best way to create engagement, to grow trust, to really grow a fan base around your business, because even small numbers of podcast listeners have a huge effect. It's been shown around the stats that a podcast listener is worth more than a blog reader. You know, it's just in terms of conversion numbers. You know, if you have 100 podcast listeners, you'll get a significant number of them take action on something you ask them to do. So like 20 out of 100 might actually do something that you ask them to do, whether it's just click a link or join your email list or buy a product. Whereas if you ask someone to do something on a blog post, you know, it's like 0.1% conversion rates, that type of thing. It's very small conversion rates because of the engagement you get through it, because of the personality, because of the trust that you grow. I mean, that bears out on us as well. Like, we do as much blogging as we do podcasting. Both of those are really important parts of our business. But the conversion rate off our blog versus the conversion rate on our podcast is just, it's a ridiculous difference. It's an order of magnitude difference. So any business can make podcasting work, and it works really well alongside the other mediums as well. So I would say give it a shot. And the way to give it a shot, the way to get over that procrastination, is to keep it simple. First 10 episodes, plan out a season, take the most common question you're asked by your audience. Everyone that runs a business is asked something most commonly. You know, it's who comes into your shop and just ask a question straight away. What's the most common thing people ask you? They say, oh, what do you do? And you go, oh, I'm a plumber. And then somebody goes, oh, well, you know, how do I fix my toilet? What's the most common question that people always ask you first? Answer that as your first season. Break that down into 5 or 10 episodes. That's your first season. And just keep it really, really, really simple. Just buy a simple little USB microphone. Don't obsess over the kit. Plug it into your computer. Record it on your phone. You know, pull out your mobile phone and just record it into your phone, into the Dictaphone app, and keep it simple. Don't even edit it. Just treat it as raw, rough, and ready, and put it out there. Because nobody will be listening to your first few episodes anyway. It's really that first step, that first 10 episodes is where you're figuring out what you really want to talk about. You're finding your voice. You're finding those first few listeners who will really tell you what they want to hear about. So it's just about keeping it rough and ready and simple and building up that habit of recording every single week and planning it out ahead of time. And that's what gets people into it. That's what gets people past that initial hurdle and start growing your audience.
Great advice. Yeah. I tell people with blogging, because a lot of people have the same, I don't know whether it's a fear or that they're just hesitant to do blogging, and they put up barriers like, I don't know what to blog about and so on. So I use the same approach in terms of what are the most common questions that people ask your business because there must be hundreds of them or there's probably 20 common ones. So great advice and just get started and get it underway. It doesn't have to be perfect to start with. And then what you'll find is that people will contact you and say, I found that interesting. I've got other questions. And then all of a sudden you start to get content together for season two.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's that if you can build in the feedback from your listeners to power future episodes, future seasons, that's even more powerful because they're then involved. They feel invested and they're more likely to listen and tell their friends about it.
Mm. All right. Well, this is terrific, Colin. I think it's time, though, that we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions that I'm going to ask you that hopefully you'll give us some really insightful answers that will inspire the audience to do something awesome today.
Sure.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
I think it's about being open-minded to trying lots of different things. It's about being less single-minded. And I know this goes against some common wisdom, like the one thing and all that kind of thing. But I think to be innovative, to be creative, you need to know different things. You need to be an artist as well as a technologist. You need to be, you know, a surfer as well as a coder. Yeah, because different disciplines, you know, they combine. And you need to have skills in a few different things to be creative. I've seen the definition of creativity once being like being able to apply one industry to another, completely unrelated industries to each other. And it's a combination of things that makes creativity. It's not being completely original. It's about combining existing things that might otherwise not be obvious to combine. So I think it's about being more open-minded, doing lots of different things and applying it all to each other.
Mm, great advice. Yeah. And looking outside your own industry and being open to new possibilities is definitely something that brings in those new possibilities. And I like the idea of combining things together. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
There's one thing we did which has led to more new ideas, more new products than anything, which is anytime anyone signs up to our mailing list, it's pretty obvious, again, common sense, maybe not that common. Within the first five emails, I send them a little one-liner which just says, hi, this week, just one thing. What are you struggling with right now in your podcasting? And I get so many replies to that question. So many people email back and it takes up a fair bit of time to go through them all because we get, 30, 40, 50 signups a day and a fair few people reply to it because it's such a kind of simple, easy thing and it looks like it's quite personal. It's coming straight to them. But the answers I get to that are that's gold for us because it's the problems people are experiencing. It's the issues they're having. It's the barriers they can't get across. And that is what you want to know. That is what you need to know to be able to create products, to be able to come up with ideas that grow your business. It's knowing the pains that people are experiencing so that you can try and come up with a solution.
Mm. I love that on so many levels because essentially it's a marketing journey, isn't it? So you've got your audience who you've defined very clearly because they're people that are interested in learning about podcasting. And they sign up to your list and now you've asked them this question as to what are your major struggles right now? So you're learning more about what are their pain points, what are their issues and frustrations, and then you look at how you can help.
Indeed, indeed. Mm. That's what led to our news product, actually, Alitu, because it was we get more questions about podcast production, podcast editing than anything else. And more often than not, it's about how can I avoid it? How can I avoid doing normalization? How can I avoid having to convert my files and figure out bit rates and all that kind of thing? Mm. And we got so many of them that I started looking into whether we could create a product that did that for them. And that's what led to Alitu, which is our podcast maker app.
Love that approach. Really good. All right. What's your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Do you know, something I've been using a lot recently is a tool called Notion. So it's Notion.so, I think. Notion.so.
That's right.
Do you know what it is? It's nothing particularly fancy, again. It's actually just pretty much a wiki.
Yeah.
But it's a private wiki, if you remember those things back in the days of wikis. So you can, it's basically a system whereby you can have collaborative web pages. You can create pages really easily, create links through to other pages really easily. And it just lets me organize my ideas, and especially with my team as well. So we used to use Google Docs a fair bit for collaboration, for creating plans, for brainstorming ideas. But I always found it really hard to organize stuff in Google Docs. Like, you couldn't have much of a hierarchy. You couldn't link between documents so easily. Or that's what I found anyway. I know you can, but with Notion, it's just so easy to be writing up a page and just order stuff in columns, and you've got nice formatting tools, and you can link from page to page to page, create new pages really easily. And I just find it a really quick and easy way to jot down ideas, to collaborate with my team. And that's really helped our planning, our collaboration, our brainstorming processes.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with Notion. It's so easy to embed videos and images and so on. It's very visual because you can lay it out in Kanban format, which I imagine, you know, we were talking about the series of podcasts and lesson structure and so on. I think the Kanban tool would be really useful for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we use it actually. We use Notion a lot for our podcast planning. All of our episodes and our seasons are in there. So I've got a page for Podcraft, just with a couple of the main outlines, like our description, our bio, that kind of thing. And then in there, we've got season one, season two, season three. And then within season one, we've got a page for every single episode. And then in every single episode, you've got the outline. And then even in there, we've got some links to, you know, resources that we might need on it. And I can embed my speak pipe. So you can embed like listener questions right in the page there. So I can be going through the plan and just press the play button and play it right into our recording. So it's just so useful for that.
All right. And we'll have links to Notion.so in the show notes as well, so people can check it out. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Am I allowed to say Notion again? we do use
so
that.
So you use it as project management?
We do, yeah. We do use it for project management. But actually, I mean, I think tools work for that. But probably the best thing for that is you use the tools to organize it and keep people on track. But actually, it's about regular meetings, regular catch-ups. So if we are working on a project internally with my team, we'll have meetings for that project on a regular basis. Every Monday morning, for example, I meet up with development team to talk about Alitu that week. We write down in Notion, right here is a review of last week. Here is what we plan to do this coming week. Here are some possible barriers, some possible issues. Here are a couple of little to-dos, little tasks we have to get done. And we do that every single week. And then the next week, we review what happened last week. And again, common sense, if you don't write these things down, I have found that many times I've been working with clients or projects or working internally, and we've just kind of assumed that, you know, we've talked about it, so it'll happen. But it's the writing down, it's the communicating, and it's the setting the next meeting at the current meeting, because otherwise it just extends off into the distance, doesn't it? You have to say, right, this is when we're going to review this. This is the next time we're going to meet up, and we're going to talk about exactly what we've done today and whether we've achieved it or not. And for me, that's the important bit. It's just being really pedantic about logging what you're planning, reviewing that log, and making sure you know exactly when you're going to do it.
Yeah, really good idea. Regular communication and meetings and keeping people accountable. All right.
I feel frustrated sometimes with when I know there's a meeting coming up, there's so much to do, and I know I've got to sit down for like an hour's worth of team meetings or even 2 hours or something like that. I often feel frustrated in the 5 minutes leading up to it, saying, oh, I wish I could put this off. I just want to do some real work. But it's always by the end of that hour, the end of that 2 hours, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I did that, because now I know exactly what we need to do. I could have just sat down without having this and jumped into something, but it probably would have been the wrong thing. And the whole team would have been off in different directions. Or even if you're working by yourself, you'd have been off in random directions. But having done the meeting, having reviewed the last week, you have a much clearer picture of the direction you need to go, of the next task you need to do. So it's worth every single minute you spend on that.
All right. Good advice. So what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I think this comes back a bit. You know, there's always the standard answer to this. It's be yourself. Yeah. But that's not really very helpful. I think the way to be yourself, but in a way that's actually practical, a thing that you can do, is really to think through, going back a little bit to that, be a bit of a, be a bit varied, like do different things, is to find your unique combination of skills. It's to find the things that make you unique in particular. And this can take a lot of thinking over quite a long time. And often it comes down to really random things. And often it comes down to things that are not related to your work initially as well. So to take me as an example, for my education background, when I first got into podcasting, I started talking about podcasting. I never even thought about the kind of teaching side of things, the work I'd done in education, the web design stuff. It was just, I thought, you know, it's just podcasting. That's what I'm teaching. All I'm going to do is talk about podcasting. But more and more over the years, it became obvious that my differentiation is the fact that I know how to teach. I had 5, 6, 7 years in university level teaching. And actually that applies hugely to podcasting. And half the time, like you've ended up asking me quite a few questions about that. And half the time that is what people ask me about, because it is the kind of part of me, as opposed to what other podcasting coaches can talk about. So I think it's about finding those bits of your history that might seem quite unrelated. And I suppose teaching is maybe, it's not a great example of that because it probably relates to most stuff. But, you know, even if you're a flower arranger by hobby, maybe there's something in that that applies to being a business coach or you're a surfer or a mountain biker, or you do stamp collecting, or you know, something about you where you've developed skills as a hobby or in a previous career, previous life, whatever it is, that you can apply to what you do now. That's how you differentiate yourself, I think, because just about always things that you've done in the past, things that you've been passionate about, they can apply to what you do now and add personality to it, add differentiation to it, just create a different approach. For me, that's how you differentiate. It's something to do with your personality, your experience that makes you unique.
That's great advice. And I think in terms of people looking to stand out and be unique, it's often things in their background that they overlook because they're focused on what they're currently doing right now, and they don't kind of connect the two together.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a mistake some people think is that whole one thing approach, which I really don't like, because I think it just creates one-dimensional human beings. If you spend 5 years literally just doing one thing, you become very good at that one thing, but other people can be just as good at that one thing. Like it's just about the time you put into it, and you know, it's the effort you put into it. Then you're just competing on work ethic. Whereas if you're a bit more, you know, a bit more of an everyman, like you're a bit more varied in what you do, you bring those varied skills. It makes you more creative, more unique. It's just, I think it's more healthy for you as a human being, but it also just creates more personality, more standout. It makes you more interesting, which makes you stand out amongst that bunch of people who can do that one thing, but just don't really have any unique aspects to it.
And there's a bit of, you mentioned personality, there's a bit of the relationship side of that there too. If you, you know, for example, mountain biking, you mentioned, if you bring that in, you've got some skills in that area, or, you know, let's say for an example, you've been a mountain bike racer, and so you can talk about, you know, the discipline of training and how it applies to mountain bike, and how, you know, focusing on the direction you're headed rather than hitting rocks or falling off or hitting a tree coming down the hill and these sort of things. So then that helps build a relationship with people in a way that nobody else can as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if it just makes you human in these people's eyes, that you're not just a podcast coach or a business coach or whatever it is, you're also a human that goes out mountain biking on the weekends goes camping with his kids or, you know, something like that. It just... That's how people remember you. You're not just a business coach, but you're a human behind it as well.
All right. Well, thanks for getting us through the buzz. So what's the future for you then, and for all of your various podcasting initiatives?
Yeah, the Alitu is really where I'm concentrating just now. It's our app, which is It's basically an application, a web application, soon to be a mobile app as well, where you can just upload a raw bit of audio. So you just record something anywhere, whether it's on your mobile phone or whether it's a Facebook live session or whether it's on your computer, a Skype call, that kind of thing. You upload that to Alitu and we can add your branding. So your intro music, your outro music. We can piece a few pieces together, a few recordings together. So like your interview plus your intro and your outro speech bit. We can put an adverts, that kind of thing. We process it for you. So we convert the audio, we make it sound good, polish it all up. And then we export it with the right podcast settings and send it off to any host as well, like Libsyn, Blueberry, Buzzsprout, all them kind of places. So that's our kind of, that's my big thing right now, is try to get that out to more and more people and improve it, like talking to people about what we can put in there that makes podcasting easier. Because there's so many people we talk to that they would like to run a podcast, but they're intimidated by the tech.
Mm.
Or they would like to run a podcast, but they just don't quite have the time it takes to do the editing and the production and all that kind of stuff. So I just want to make it as simple as humanly possible so that people can just pick up the recorder, they can record a simple bit of audio, they can then give that to us and we do the rest. And we do that automatically as well. So that's my thing. I'm off to Podcast Movement next week, actually, in Philadelphia. So I would speak to a lot of podcasters about the app and find out what they like about it, what they don't like about it, what we can do better with it. Get them in there. We've got our academy alongside that as well. So we're continually coaching people. They come in and do our courses and helping people release great podcasts and get their voice out into the world. So it's a combination of the two of them, really. That's what we're growing right now. So it's exciting stuff. Enjoy every minute of it.
Mm. And what do you see as the future of podcasting? I mean, you mentioned the big exhibition or the conference in Philadelphia, which is one of the big ones, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's the biggest one in the world, I would say, for podcasting, certainly. The future of podcasting, I think it's just going to be more and more ubiquitous in terms of how you listen. It's great how the tech is just disappearing. You know, Google announced a lot of changes recently whereby if you now type Podcraft podcast into Google, it actually pops up top, but with a player right there.
Yeah, that's right.
Search results, which is amazing.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just taking the barriers away from people listening, because that's really, I mean, we talked earlier about the slower growth and, you know, some mediums. That's why. It's because the tech, it's because people have to find a podcast. They have to go and find a podcast player for their phone, their particular type of phone, download it, and then subscribe to that show and then remember to take their headphones with them to listen to it and that kind of stuff. But if it's appearing in the Google results, there's just a play button right there. People can listen in the browser. It really simply, really easily, I think that's going to grow us quicker than anything. And Google have committed to, this is really exciting for me, Google themselves have committed to doubling the podcast listenership over the next year. And you know, that would be kind of, it would seem like bluster from most people, but if anyone can do that, it's Google.
Google, yeah. Well, that... They've recently released their own podcasting listening app, whatever you call that, like iTunes for Android. And it's linked in. The exciting thing is it's linked in intimately with Google Voice Search. So you can get your phone, say, you know, in Overbuzz podcast, and it basically opens up the app and takes you to the most recent episode.
No, it's going to be great. I think it's going to be really exciting to see the effect that has. I think there's going to be a lot of buzz around that Podcast Movement next week.
Yeah. In fact, my wife recently, this is quite amazing because I'm the tech geek in the family, but my wife recently bought one of these Google, what are they called? The assistants, the little...
Oh, the smart speaker.
Google. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And she said, oh, you can do all these amazing things with it. And I wasn't paying much attention because it was her toy. But one day I was there on my own and I just sort of said, hey, Google, play the InnovaBuzz podcast. up came the latest episode and it just started. And I thought, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, smart speakers are having a big effect, I think. I mean, I listen to a fair few I've got the Echo, Amazon Echo. So I listen to a fair few. Just, Alexa, play the InnovaBuzz podcast. Please right away too. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Colin. This has been really great. So before we sort of head off What's the number one piece of advice you give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field?
It's ask those questions. It's ask your customers, talk to people, find out what the biggest problem they're having is, either whether it's the most commonly asked question. So that's the problem. Find that problem that you're going to solve and then find your solution. Like think of what your first solution is and think of something small, a small solution first, you know, something quick and easy that you can get out there to start building traction. And importantly, think about that uniqueness that we talked about as well. So you've got your problem and your solution, but why are you uniquely served to solve it? Why should people come to you as opposed to the dozens or hundreds of other people out there that might have the same skills? And again, that's down to just thinking about your history, your experience, like what do you uniquely bring to that solution, to that problem, to do it? I think if you can solve those three parts, if you can go through those three parts, and that's not easy, that takes hours or days or months even to figure that out. But once you can solve those three and you can validate it by talking to customers and making sure that really is the problem they have, the solution they want, and a uniqueness that they're attracted towards, as soon as you have that, you've got a successful business.
Yeah, great advice. And I like how you brought all the things we've been speaking about in the buzz together there. It's really good. All right. Well, thanks, Colin. Where can people reach out to you and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Yeah, get in touch on Twitter is probably the most easy way. I'm on Twitter a fair bit, which is The Podcast Host. So pop on there. And if anyone wants to find out a bit more about starting a podcast, we've got our big How to Start a Podcast article. It's full step-by-step guide from total beginner, total scratch starting a podcast. You can find that over at thepodcasthost.com/start.
Okay. We'll have links to that in the show notes because that definitely is a really good article. I referred to that quite often in my early days. So perfect. That's very helpful. All right. Finally then, Colin, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Oh, good question. I'll say Mark Asquith, simply because I'm meeting him in a few days on the way to Podcast Movement. So he's top of mind just now. He runs the Excellence Expected podcast and runs podcast websites as well, which is a hosting company. So that's one. The other actually is Chris Marr. So if you talk to Chris Marr, he runs the Content Marketing Academy event. And he has tons of great speakers coming to Edinburgh every single year too. So he's a great guy to talk to about content marketing, about running events, about what's going on in content marketing just now. So there's a two for one.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, well, we've had Chris on the podcast a couple of times, actually. He's a great guest. So maybe it's time to have him back on.
Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, Mark and Chris, keep an eye on your inboxes for an invitation from us, courtesy of Colin Gray. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today on the Innova Buzz podcast, Colin. I've really enjoyed this immensely. I've got a whole page of notes. I've learned a lot. There's a few tips and ideas there for me. And hopefully the audience will get a lot out of this as well. So I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Indeed. No, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jorgen. It's been a pleasure. And hopefully speak to some of your listeners very soon on Twitter.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, that was another highly entertaining and educational episode with a lot of valuable advice about podcasting. All the ideas and tips that Colin shared with us can be found at innovabiz.co/Colin Gray. That is Colingray. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Colin Gray. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Colin there, as well as links to the free podcasting resource that he shared with us. Colin suggested I interview Mark Asquith from Excellence Expected, and he also suggested a previous guest, Chris Marr, from the Content Marketing Academy on a future Innova Buzz podcast. So Mark and Chris, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Colin Gray. We have had Chris on a number of times before, as I said, and we look forward to having him back and meeting Mark. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.